You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome into the Line 24/7 podcast. Welcome into 2022. I am Tyler Donahue. He is Sean Fitz. And here on New Year's Day in Tampa, Florida at Raymond James Stadium, we watched Penn State jump out to a 10-7 lead at halftime, but blanked after that, falling 24-10 against Arkansas. Arkansas, three consecutive scoring drives in the third quarter in which they rushed for almost 180 yards. That was a momentum changer. Penn State could not produce a spark offensively to provide an answer. Late turnover in the fourth quarter intercepted Sean Clifford in the end zone. That just about snuffed any chance for Penn State to rally. And Sean, you almost nailed this. You had Penn State at 10 points. You had Arkansas at 20. Arkansas scored a little more than you thought, but you were just about on the money. And I said it, if they come out of this game scoring 10 points, get ready for a long winter of discussions about Sean Clifford, Mike Yurcich, and what comes next.
Yeah, can't wait to talk about that for the next 9 months. It's going to be awesome. But no, I mean, it's kind of, and I also should have nailed it, by the way, because there was a garbage missed false start there right before the touchdown. It should have been a field goal. So it should have been 20-10. And that's the asterisk that we'll put back in it. But yeah, it was kind of how we played it, or how we thought it would play out, in terms of Arkansas overmatched Penn State. They outmanned them. Penn State's missing guys really showed up in a big way today. And, you know, you could argue that the outcome would be different if those guys were out there, but that doesn't matter. I mean, you know, Penn State falls to 7-6. And, you know, you come out of this and there's really not a ton of optimism in terms of what you saw building there. The way that Penn State had that 4-year stretch there where they're, you know, winning a ton of games and going to New Year's Six Bowls and stuff like that. Now you're kind of looking and saying, is this a rebuild? Is this a situation where you go from all of a sudden sitting near the top of the mountain? Obviously, Ohio State's there at the top of the mountain, the Big Ten, and some other programs nationally are above you, but you're in the conversation right now. You're wondering what the conversation is next year and how you feel that this team can come together. Sean Clifford, another uninspiring performance, a couple of turnovers. And really you're kind of asking, what's this team identity? And unfortunately the identity is good defense, mediocre offense, and that's the recipe in college football today for just a mediocre product.
Very difficult to reconcile with mediocre offense being a staple of this Penn State football program, considering what happened 1 year ago when James Franklin dumped Kirk Ciarrocca, brought in Mike Yurcich to a lot of fanfare. We'll talk about that plenty. I already have. But here in this matchup, Sean, first off, the first half was fun. There was some silliness to it. Yeah. There were some plays that made you scratch your head, but it was a bowl game atmosphere. We knew Penn State was going to be without at least five defensive starters. It ended up being six because Tariq Castro Fields, whether you call it an opt-out, whether medical stuff was in play, he didn't practice this week, and then we saw him on the sideline for this matchup. So you're without him. You knew you were without Dotson and Rasheed Walker on the other side of the football, but Penn State gets to halftime at 10-7, and you're thinking, all right, well, this is probably better than we anticipated. The second half, which we'll talk about to an extent in a moment, it was basically the worst-case scenario of how we thought the game could go in a bad way for Penn State, and ultimately that's how it went. The Avalanche got started. Penn State had no response, and a 24-10 loss drops the team to 7-6. It's the first time since 2015 in a full season that they have failed to reach 9 wins and much less 8 in this circumstance. And of course, when you start 5-0 and you get to number 4 in the country and everybody starts generating that kind of conversation and that kind of dialogue, and to see it end in this kind of manner, it's startling. It's jolting. I think we're all suffering from some kind of whiplash. And at the end of the day, this is a program that, since they walked off the field in the Cotton Bowl game, which was an awesome time, the last time you and I were side by side before today on the road, since then they're a 500 football team. And make of 2020 what you will, make of this season what you will, but they've had a 9-game win streak involved in this 2-year span, and yet they are a 500 football program.
It's really incredible when you look at how they played this year and you get the same story week after week. And that's disappointing when you're talking about the things that you need to fix. And James Franklin's talking about it. Mike Yurcich is talking about it, the things that you need to fix. And it's just not happening. I know you can't, this is not the NFL. You can't go out and sign a guy. You can't go make a trade or anything like that. So you have to do what you have to work with what you have, but at the same time, you have to work around that rather than work against it. It just seems like they're working against it. I mean, 10 points, you look at the schedule this year, that's the least amount of points they've scored in a game this year, but they also haven't scored over 28 against an FBS opponent or a Big Ten opponent. That's not going to get it done. And when Mike Yurcich came in with the accolades and all this kind of stuff, and you've got a veteran quarterback who is hot and cold, but you can't have him running cold as much as he's been. I mean, I think that's kind of something we'll get to a little bit later with the quarterbacks. But the first half, as you said, wasn't all bad. I mean, you had a 10-7 lead. If you were there at the stadium, it looked like a party. It looked like fun. It looked like some of those young guys that we are looking to were able to get out and get some of the nervous, the butterflies out and play a pretty solid half of football. I mean, it helps that Arkansas was dumb and just didn't run the ball as much as they should, try to pass it. And they're not a passing team whatsoever. They're completely one dimensional, which is fine if you can get that done. But that was crazy. But you hit the big play to Parker Washington right out of the gate. You know, he's your new number one receiver. I think he can fit in that really well. You missed a field goal because of an intentional grounding call by your fifth year quarterback, your multi-year starter there. I mean, that's kind of the same thing that you've run into over and over again this year. Defense came back, they got run down the field, but they got an interception from Jair Brown, who, by the way, has been terrific, had two more picks today, generally very good. And this defense, while they started like they missed those guys opting out, they really seemed to come around and you know, stay true to their gaps and do some very good things. Tackling was an issue, obviously, all day. But you really like some of the stuff that you were seeing. And 10-7 lead at halftime didn't feel like one where they could potentially fall apart. Now they eventually did. But it was kind of fun. I mean, just the optimism of the unknown is something that we've talked about before, and you can't dwell on the guys that aren't there. But it was kind of fun to see those guys feel themselves out, and unfortunately, it didn't carry over to the second half.
Yeah, we discussed this. Are we watching kind of the pre-spring game, or are we watching the end of the 2021 season? Because in a lot of ways, it feels like
a spring game. Yeah,
right. You feel like you're watching the 2022 Penn State football program. It feels like the guys who are down here, minus those who are out of eligibility, or as we'll talk about, Jesse Lucchetta, who made his decision after this game. Everybody else is seemingly in for 2022. We have to hear announcements from a couple guys, but whoever's down here, it kind of feels like they're part of the plan for next year if they've got that eligibility and you know, unless there's some of the circumstances we talked about with the bonus eligibility. And Sean, going back to that missed field goal, it was Jake Pinniger handling duties as the place kicker today. And James Franklin, I don't think it was as clear to us in the media room as he thought it was. He thought he was apparently more decisive in conversations with us back in late November about Jake Pinniger taking over the place-kicking duties from Jordan Stout. They felt like they were a little too up and down in that capacity, while Stout was an All-American-level punter, an outstanding kickoff specialist. It's something we talked about in a lot of post-game podcasts that let them down at times. Jake Pinniger's first one was a doozy, and not in a good way. A big miss for them, and of course, then Arkansas comes down, throws that pick. Quick note on Jair Brown before we don't note it. Did not practice at all this week. Jesse Lucchetta referred to him as their version of Allen Iverson, referencing that old practice press conference. I love that from Jesse. But Jair Brown goes out there, a couple picks. The instincts were flashing. They got a hell of a player coming back in 2022. Just want to really give him some credit. And he reminded everybody in this press conference, coming out of high school, one team gave him an opportunity to join their roster, Montclair State.
Yeah, we don't get too many Montclair State offers in the database there at 24/7 Sports. So good on him for getting it. And James Franklin said afterwards, it means a lot to him. And you can tell some of these players that it means that much to them. Offensively, Penn State was really good at moving the ball in the second quarter on offense, 172 yards. They had the 42-yard touchdown on the big play to Keandre Lambert-Smith, which was obviously a blown coverage by Arkansas, but you know, that's what you try to exploit. They also ran the ball and had 48 yards rushing in that quarter, which you know, is not a number that jumps off the page unless you followed Penn State this year and know that they're running game. I know this is a point that I'm going to let you make because you were really, really adamant about this during the game, but Kevon Lee got involved and then he kind of went away.
Yeah, so it's kind of like we're talking in circles when we have these conversations with the staff, whether it's been James Franklin for the most part, or occasionally Mike Yurcich, or occasionally Jaywon Sider. there's this part of the conversation where they're waiting for a guy to take the job. And we've heard this since early August. I mean, we've heard this since spring, really, about this backfield, because about the competition in the room and everything. And you get to this point now, and a lot of the stuff just rattles around because we've heard it over and over again. And from James Franklin, who I asked directly about Kevon Lee's usage after this game, he didn't address Kevon Lee and that situation directly, but he said, once again, they've got to do a better job of mixing in the run. He felt like they got away from that, and he said he agreed that probably wasn't the best thing to do. So I think when, you know, we keep hearing that from James Franklin, you want to mix in the run. Have you given guys a real opportunity to take it? And most notably, Kevon Lee. This feels like an opportunity to send a sophomore out of the season with some momentum, feeling good about himself. You know, he talked a lot about it this week in practice, wanting to be the guy who went out there and got the 100-yard rushing game. And you look at what he did early in the matchup, Sean, when he was getting involved. He was the guy on the field for the first couple series. We saw some Noah Kane, but then it was Kevon Lee again. During that field goal drive that Penn State had that put them up 10-7, he had a couple big plays. He had a 25-yard run, a 15-yard catch. He had five touches and turned them into more than 50 yards midway through the second quarter. And then midway through the second quarter, we didn't see him touch the ball again until early in the fourth quarter in a matchup where you're missing Jahan Dotson. And this wasn't a situation where they found another hot hand. You had Noah Kane touching the ball five times. You had Devin Ford with one carry. For whatever reason, Mike Yurcich decided this was a game that it made sense to have Sean Clifford be the guy to try to elevate this offensive attack against Arkansas. And I just really have a hard time reconciling what this run game has turned into. And I have a hard time saying there's some kind of talent deficiency, because I've seen these guys play well in big matchups over the course of their career at different stages in college. And I've seen flashes from Kevon Lee most recently in the first half. And is he a finished product? Is he an all Big Ten caliber running back? I'm not saying that, but he certainly seemed to be what they were describing, the hot hand. And just when you were getting that heat, they put him on ice.
Yeah. And he moved the chains, and that's something that they haven't had so much. You know, I said it, you know, early in the game, they were going to need Clifford to run, but not in the sense that you have more carries for your quarterback than you have for your two running backs. And that's, you know, that's kind of a product of how they've worked. But in the Yurcich system, just you find yourself too often spiraling and then trying to chase. I mean, it's like you're gambling and you make a loss and then you try to make up for it with your next bet. They do that with the passing game. I mean, that's really a tough way to try and stay on top of things. And it results in empty possessions. And I think that's kind of I think that's probably the theme for the offense this year, is so many empty possessions, whether it's getting down and not finishing and not executing. And I think a lot of it is execution. I think the middle part of that game, the second and third quarter, you saw some really good play calls and just missed throws and missed opportunities, maybe some drops. And, I think that's really what you've got with this offense in 2021, or last year, I guess now you could say, is just, there's a lot of empty possessions, and that's something where you can have those if you supplement it with big plays. We saw the Joe Moorhead offense did have empty possessions as well, but they were able to hit these chunk plays, and that's really not what you're getting with this offense right now. Had the big play to Washington to start the game, got 0 points at it. Had the big play to Keandre Lambert Smith where you get the touchdown, but in between there, those in between possessions, you're not getting it done. And I think that's probably the thing that you have to look to if you're Mike Yurcich, say, how do we make this change?
You had one touchdown and it required a one play drive. And we're talking about a matchup where the front seven is as thin as you can possibly imagine. As it turned out, those freshmen that we thought might burn red shirts. And in fact, on Wednesday during his press conference, James Franklin said that red shirts would be burned in this matchup. And so that led us to believe Kobe King, at least, and potentially Jamari Budden would be involved at linebacker, where you're missing two starters and Ellis Brooks and Brandon Smith. Nope. And the reasoning, James Franklin put it out there, and he chose to go public with this. And I think it was an interesting decision, but he said it was the player's decision as to why they did not play. He mentioned that if there were some injuries accrued, and I guess he's talking about maybe Tyler Elsden or Jesse Lucchetta or some of those others that were at Charlie Catcher, that they would have been involved. But he said it was a Kobe King / Jamari Budden decision as to why they weren't involved. So you had two starters opt out, and maybe opt out's not the right word, but seems like two freshmen who maybe could have contributed against a team that put up 360 plus rushing yards against you at least stepped aside or stepped back. And I thought that was interesting, and maybe the kind of thing that happens inside team facilities, But for Franklin to mention that in a public forum, that one stuck out to me.
You know, I get what you're saying there, but at the same time, if he puts that out there like he did, you're doing right by your players. Now, that's how it's going to be interpreted by recruits and things like that. So you're you know, adhering to the wishes of your players. And
doesn't
like that,
so doesn't that open up Kobe and Jamari to some serious criticism? I mean, you've seen some of the stuff on, and everyone's got to deal with social media in their own way, but you've seen some of the opt-out reaction. Now this is getting around with these two linebackers in a game where you were very thin at linebacker. And I don't mean to heap anything on these kids, but what we were said is they basically said, we'd rather have the opportunity to come back for a fifth year in 2025 than contribute in this matchup. I mean, that's essentially what we're talking about here.
I mean, yeah. And who knows what it's going to look like 4 years or 5 years from now. But right. Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. I don't think they make a big difference in this game. I think it's kind of consistent with what we heard all year, especially with Kobe, because he played in what, the first four games or the first three games?
Or the first five.
For the first five. And then, you know, we reported that he, you know, would prefer to redshirt. And is that the right call? I mean, I think that's a different conversation here, but is that the right call? Who knows? But yeah,
they practiced a bunch. I will say, we saw them in Tampa, Sean. They practiced a bunch. I mean, they got a bunch of reps. So it's not like these guys were on the sideline all month. They got a lot of extra reps. They got a lot of work with the ones and twos, but ultimately no work against an SEC opponent. And let's face it, this was a matchup where it was kind of all hands on deck in the front seven for Penn State's defense.
Yeah, I guess so. I'll give you that one. I'm just sitting here thinking about the fake field goal and the punt, so I really don't have any answers for you on that one. That
neither game, James Franklin, really,
that game got really, really dumb really fast. You know, Franklin said afterwards that if they didn't get the look that they wanted, they didn't get the receiver open that they wanted, that you just chuck it deep and hope you get a pass interference or hope you get an interception. It went through the guy's arm. I didn't see a replay. I just watched it live. I don't know if he tried to drop it, or I'm sure his teammates were probably trying to level him if he did catch the ball. But that one did not work very well. There was no kind of no button that you could hit to abort it. Jordan Stout just threw it up. Luckily he was bailed out by Sam Pittman, who called a double pass, which, you know, Arkansas is not a passing team by any stretch of the imagination. So double pass, who knows? They threw the pick to Jair Brown. You get Franklin off the hook, you get Pittman on the, on the same page there. And then you end the half in a 10-7 game, and that you're actually feeling pretty decent. The worry there to me is, Arkansas ran the ball a lot. Arkansas held the ball a lot. Penn State's defense was on the field a lot. So you're thinking at halftime, this might not be a good recipe for that Penn State defense that's thin already.
Yeah, and then Arkansas brought the hammer. They ran the ball, I believe it was 8 consecutive plays to begin the second half, Sean, producing 91 yards and a touchdown on those 8 plays. And the first 7 of those was part of a 7-play, 75-yard drive. And KJ Jefferson was the MVP of this matchup, but it wasn't because of what he did with his arm. He did make a couple throws. He completed 14 and 19 passes, but it was, you know, he was a big physical force, a formidable presence like we talked about. Smith Vilbert, who had a fantastic first half for this program at Penn State, you know, said he's never seen a quarterback, never encountered a quarterback like a KJ Jefferson in terms of his size and what was required to bring him down in the open field.
Will Levis.
Yes, very much. There's something to be said about that. And then you had, so not only did you have him logging 20 carries, but you had multiple Arkansas players getting in and running backs getting into double-digit carries. And that started to pile on. And as well as some of these guys played in the first half, and I thought in particular Jesse Lucchetta was flying around in the first half and doing an outstanding job communicating. You had Smith Vilbert, who was kind of Jesse Lucchetta's understudy in a lot of ways during bowl preparation through film work and everything, stepped up to the plate in some ways. And Jordan Vandenberg, a guy that stepped up at defensive tackle. But there was only so many times you could be called upon to do it, which is the other thing offensively. When you're looking for complementary football, and we haven't found much of it from Penn State in 2021, look, you know the deal, what's going on the defensive side of the football. You're down your defensive coordinator. You're down 5 starters, a few All-American players, and you know Arkansas is going to keep running the ball and trying to wear you down on a hot day down in Tampa, and yet we see them try to put this game on Sean Clifford and his arm. Again, without Jahan Dotson, without Brenton Strange for much of this matchup, he was sidelined. Malik Mega was off the field, on the field a bit. And it just felt like you wanted to counter what Arkansas was doing with a bit of a ground game of your own. But as I said, Kevon Lee doesn't touch the ball for the entire third quarter. And along the way, Arkansas goes touchdown, touchdown, field goal. And from there, it was like 14-point hole for Penn State. Forget about it.
Arkansas just took the Illinois playbook. They went 199 yards in the third quarter. 176 of it was on the ground. And really, you know, you look in the second half time of possession, 18-26 to 11-34. That's a product of that. I mean, you run the football, you sustain drives, and even if they weren't able to punch it into the end zone, you still put yourself in a position for some good field, you know, some field position football, things like that. I think that's really what, you know, has been missing with Penn State, and it all starts with the run game. And then, you know, you get to Clifford, and he's just not particularly accurate.
And
I say particularly just to soften the blow there, because he was all over the place. He threw the pick in the first half that was behind the receiver. His second one, not good at all. Just if you miss on that throw in the corner of the end zone, miss high, so you're 6'6", you know, tight end that can really move and jump, has a shot at it. He didn't have a shot at it. He threw it under the cover too, and the safety came over and did what he was supposed to do. But that's kind of the whole thing. You heaped so much on Clifford, and, you know, we'll say the same thing we say every day. Credit for him for hanging in there, taking hits, being athletic, you know, getting away. But you know, it's just not enough. And that's really the disappointing thing, especially when you're looking at, you know, a sixth year guy who's coming back next year. You've got those other quarterbacks in there. I mean, a lot's going to be on James Franklin. He's been ultra loyal to Sean Clifford, but you see probably the peak of, or you've probably seen the peak of what he is able to do for your football team. And that says to me, if you don't have some sort of competition, you're going to lose the rest of those guys.
There was some 2020 vibes today, which the way Sean Clifford played, not in a good way. And what was probably the worst part of that interception in the end zone was that was a first and goal situation, Sean. I mean, he's got to know better. This guy's going to be 24 years old next year. Throw that ball at the back of the end zone, throw it to a fan in the stands. You can't put that ball in a risky spot when you're facing a 14-point deficit and you've got another opportunity. You got a few more opportunities from inside the 10. What happened on the play that preceded it? Well, Kevon Lee showed up for the first time since the second quarter. He turned a second and five run into a five-yard gain, got you to first and 10. Then Sean Clifford throws an interception, and we never saw Kevon Lee involved again. You're playing catch-up. Christian Bayou gets involved later. But I think Sean Clifford, the footwork was a problem today, some of the decisions. And this was bad for Penn State today, but this to me is pretty problematic just in terms of going into the offseason, because there's the dark cloud again. And I said, even if Penn State had lost this game and you got a really quality, sharp performance from Sean Clifford, who just spent, you know, an extra month with Mike Yurcich. I know coaches are out recruiting and they're not practicing the entire month, but you didn't see Sean Clifford finish the way you had hoped, and you thought maybe he would harken back to the first five games in a quarter sample size. He did in one way. He was more mobile than we had seen him at any point since the Iowa matchup, and I was expecting that. But from a decision-making standpoint, from the footwork, the fundamentals, everything you would hope that would be kind of sorted out at this point in this stage of year one, now year two, I guess, with Mike Yurcich and Sean Clifford, it didn't show up. And without Jahan Dotson, you could say, all right, you'd understand why there would be at least a hiccup along the way. It wouldn't be necessarily a seamless transition. Cam Sullivan Brown, Malik Mega, anyone, they're not Jahan Dotson. They're not close. But Jahan Dotson, to me, Sean, I mentioned this before, he's always been the cheat code for Mike Yurcich. I mean, he inherited this guy. Jahan Dotson balled out for Kirk Ciarocca last year. He would have balled out for whoever the offensive coordinator was this year. You take him out of the equation. Parker Washington did his thing. But it feels like Mike Yurcich came to Happy Valley with a plan last January about how he wanted this offense to run. And game by game, no matter as the losses piled up or as the offense kind of went in disarray, he stuck with that plan. And the result here is 7-6. And I mean, you look through the point total. I know people want to parse through a lot of different things. And I have a lot of respect for Mike Yurcich as a play caller and a play designer. And you can see a lot of the plays that are available there to be made. I think that's very clear. But the end of the day, if you're an offensive coordinator, you're judged on points being scored, because that's how you win football games. And look, the last nine games now, Sean, last nine games, they went over 30 points one time. That was against Maryland. And oh, by the way, Jair Brown scored a touchdown in that matchup.
Yeah, offensive points, hard to come by. You know, the part that I'm looking at, and I go back to the empty possessions thing, is you look at that drive after Arkansas scores its first touchdown in the second half. They went down. They just ground you down, ran the ball straight at you. You got a QB keeper for Sean Clifford. Got to get a problem with the snap there. And then incomplete to Kondre Lambert-Smith, and you punt. So you've got the ball for a minute and a half. And you punt, you can't do that. You put your defense right back out there. And then you have a similar drive the next time around. You did get a first down there with Noah Kane. That third quarter offense just is really what killed you. And you're looking at how they were trying to, keep the game going. You had two carries by non-Sean Clifford players in the third quarter. Noah Kane had one, and then Parker Washington had one. So that's where it gets away from you. If you can talk about the 4-minute offense and run when everybody knows you're going to run, but you've got to run, outside that window and try to figure out how you can just sort of help the rest of your team. And that's field position. That's time of possession. That's everything like that. And heaping it all on one guy that's been very hot and cold is not the recipe to get it done.
And you know what a run does versus what an incomplete pass does? It gives your guys a chance to get a blow on the sidelines. They catch their breath a little bit. There was a lot of guys playing a ton of football on defense because of what was going on from a depth perspective. It just felt like Penn State would trot out there, and all of a sudden defense would have to come back out. And they just couldn't answer the bell with what they were facing, without their leading sack artist, without an All-American safety, without their two leading tacklers. And it goes on and on defensively what they were missing today. But I think for me, you look at that Sean Clifford stat line, what it was today, 14 of 32, 195 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. He added the 47 yards through the air. But when I look at that stat line, if you were to tell me yesterday morning or something that, hey, that's what Sean Clifford's going to do in the Outback Bowl, I would have anticipated that he spent the afternoon being harassed by the Arkansas defense, that he was battered and bruised, took 5 or 6 sacks. One sack given up today by kind of a patchwork Penn State offensive line that is by no means dominant and was not the dominant force today, but they kept Clifford pretty clean. He faced some pressure, and that led to the big intentional grounding penalty and, forced him outside the pocket. But this wasn't a situation where Sean Clifford spent the whole day, shaking the dirt off of his uniform. And this was relatively clean.
He took some shots. I mean, he took a couple real, real big shots there, especially in the second half, and eventually did have to leave for medical reasons, James Franklin said. The offensive line bar is just so low that, exactly. they weren't any good today. And, but really, how much time
we didn't get a chance to see that. I mean, what gets an offensive line going, Sean? They like the run block. When you start generating momentum on the ground, that's where you really find yourself as an offensive line. Did they have an opportunity to even do that? Maybe a little bit in the second quarter, but that's another thing you take away from them. Offensive line want to keep going. Let's move the ball. Let's have some physicality. Let's get some confidence. And I think there was just an unwillingness for whatever reason to do that today. And as James Franklin said, he agreed that they did not do the job they needed to do in mixing in the run. And I feel like this is like the fifth consecutive Saturday of Penn State football game action where James Franklin has uttered that phrase or something similar. So I don't know if him and his offensive coordinator are on the same page, or if things kind of get away from them over the course of the game after planning all week. But that is something that is really difficult for us to hear on a daily basis. And I know for the fans, it is just excruciating.
Yeah, because you hear the same thing over and over again, but the answers are not there, and the answers do, or the results don't change. Arkansas 279 yards in the second half. Penn State 94 yards in the second half. Obviously, the time of possession, with the way that the Arkansas was running the ball, heavily in the Razorbacks' favor. So I guess the question here, and we'll get to more big picture stuff next week. I mean, what do we take away from this? I mean, there's plenty that you can think of. I for one. Fine with the first half. I thought they were in a pretty good spot, especially given the expectations that we leveled beforehand, in terms of that's the way to beat Penn State is grind them down and run straight at them. And Arkansas didn't really do that in the first half. It looked fun. If you were there, it looked like everybody was having a good time. I'm a big fan of this bowl for that reason. It seems more like a party than anything. But on the field, I mean, you just got to look at that offense and you got to think something's got to change. The running backs were not effective this year, but I don't think they were the problem today. I mean, you've already covered that in you know, fine form. Clifford with more carries than your running backs combined, or your two starting running backs combined, and one of them was a sack. But I mean, that's tough. And you go through and you say, coming back at wide receiver next year, you're losing an All-American in Jahan Dotson. You've got Parker Washington, who looked really good. You've got Keandre Lambert-Smith, who looked pretty good. You've got Mitchell Tinsley coming in from Western Kentucky, who you think that's a formidable trio right there. Malik Mega's got a lot to learn. He dropped a pass today that probably should have been caught down the sideline. But, you know, you can work with that. You can make that happen. The tight end's got to be better, but use them. I mean, that's the thing. Like, Brenton Strange got hurt today early, so he was out, but still. You got talent there, and you don't have a track record of using those tight ends, but I mean, that's got to be something you bend on, right?
Yeah. Tyler Warren, 1 catch, 0 yards. Brenton Strain, 1 catch, -1 yards. Theo Johnson shut out of the box score. That can't happen to me. You've recruited too well at the tight end position. You have too much talent at that position, and you're down Jahan Dotson. You're not using the running backs. You're not using the tight ends. What are we doing?
I don't know what you're doing. That seemed aggressive there, whatever that sound was. And it goes back in general to the offensive philosophy to hit those big plays, to hit those chunk plays. But if they're not there, what do you have? And that's really there's such a high and low about this offense, where you hit those big plays, that big play to Keandre Lambert-Smith, or that big play against Wisconsin to Jahan Dotson. But just the in-between possessions, you're not getting it, and you're not putting yourself in a position to play a style. You know, you can meet in the middle there between what Moorhead likes to do and what Franklin likes to do in terms of playing a possession-based special teams field position type game. There's, you know, if you're moving the ball, you can find yourself in that position. And really, they've kind of lost themselves. And, you know, that's partially offensive line, partially Sean Clifford. Mike Yersich deserves the blame as well. But they have not found themselves on offense. And I think the scariest part there is what do you fix, and how does that come? Because if it's a quarterback, you're going to have, freshmen, or you're going to have those growing pains and things like that. If it's an offensive line, you know, you're upset in the room with transfers and things like that, but maybe that's okay. I don't know that there's an answer. I don't know that there's 3 or 4 answers, but you can't go through scoring 10 points in multiple games this year and expecting good results.
This was such a Clifford-centric game plan at the end of it, whether they meant to do it this way or not. And I know some of these rushes for Clifford were improvisational, not necessarily designed, but he had 32 throws, 11 carries. And then you look at how the touches were distributed across the offense, Sean. You had Parker Washington, 7 catches for 98 yards. But then you Lee and Kane had 5 touches. I should say 6 for Lee, because he had a 15-yard reception as well. And then 3 catches for Lambert-Smith. And you go down the list, and there's just not really any kind of distribution getting the ball in the playmaker's hands. And I think Sean Clifford, we talk about his veteran presence and a guy who can do some things with his leg, but this is not the quarterback – I think that you load him up and say, go beat a top 25 Arkansas team, essentially carry the team to a victory, and do it without the guy who you threw 91 pass completions to in 2021.
Yeah. I'm looking at stats right now. Arkansas ran the ball 58 times. And now sacks were included in that. And Penn State did actually get to the quarterback, I think, 5 times. You talked about Smith-Filbert earlier, but Penn State was better in balance, but in the end, it didn't matter, because you weren't sustaining drives, you weren't keeping the ball, and you weren't hitting those big plays. I thought in terms of the running backs, they were okay. You know, when you got the ball there, they ran some counter stuff that was really nice, and Noah Kane looked like he had a little bit of burst there, and you know, it looked like there was something to build on there. But when you just heap so much of it on Sean Clifford, and he's not Trace McSorley, and he's not a guy that's going to go out there and contend for the Heisman or anything like that. That's a problem when you're asking a guy to do so much of what you want to get done, when he's just, I don't know that he's capable of what they're asking of him.
And I'm certainly curious of where Jaywon Slater comes down on this kind of the dynamics that have happened. And we know how high he was on this room. It felt like, I mean, he was antsy to get into this season and start using all these weapons in his running back room, and to see where it ended up and to see the lack of usage in this particular matchup, and knowing what they have coming in just a matter of a week or so with Nicholas Singleton and Ka'Tron Allen, they got to sit down and sort some things out. Hard for me to say clearly. Jaywon Slater, run game coordinator, running backs coach, Phil Troutwine, offensive line coach. They've been together now for 2 years, you think going on three. And then Mike Yurcich, who was the new guy in town this year. I don't know what was missing, but there was not a cohesion. And that's not just me saying hearing things in the facility or anything. This is just me saying I see the games and I see the lack of production and the lack of points. And I can't imagine Jaywon Slater is pleased with this. And I'm just really curious. It's going to be a hard discussion. I'd imagine there's going to be a lot of emotions that go into the autopsy of what happened offensively. And for Mike Yurcich, I don't necessarily know what the conversation is going to be like with James Franklin when they kind of sort through what went wrong, what went right, what they're going to bring into the 2022 season, what they're going to leave behind in 2021. But there is a lot to go through. And James Franklin, in so many ways, although he's got this new 10-year contract, in a lot of ways, he hitched himself to Mike Yurcich by making that bold, aggressive move last January. And I just don't see how you can look at it from any angle and say that the offense took a definitive positive stride outside of that five-game vacuum with the way Sean Clifford looked.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, there's no way around it. And I don't know that it's worth, you know, trying to throw more words at it, because you right. just can't. I came into this game, you know, like I said, taking it for what it was worth to watch some younger guys. And I thought we saw some flashes. I really did. I thought, yes. You know, despite the end of the score, you had two guys and they ended up playing together on the left side of that line a little bit. Olu Fashanu and Landon Tengwall. You know, I haven't looked at the tape yet or the cutups or anything like that, but I'm encouraged. You know, you look at what Penn State's trying to do on the offensive line next year, and you want to see them maybe, you know, ruffle some feathers or shake the cage or whatever. And those two, I think, would factor prominently into that. Fashanu, if you've got a tackle there, then you need all the tackles you can get. Tengwall, you might have a tackle there, but you have a guy that can hold up as a true freshman. So I was really encouraged by those two guys, and I hope that we continue to see a lot more of them and they get as many reps as possible before next season.
Yeah, and we saw Tengwall, I think, at both guard positions today. I believe he may have worked a little bit at guard. Yeah, so, you know, and we've seen him at tackle, and so he's exactly what we kind of billed him as coming in last year, a guy that should get an opportunity to find multiple paths to the field. I have to imagine he will find a path to a starting job next year as long as he stays healthy and stays on the track he currently is on. But, yeah, Olu Fashanu, I was wondering about him. I can't imagine he slept all that soundly last night heading into his first start, but he held it himself well. It wasn't a perfect performance. And overall, I think you can find worse offensive line performances over the course of this game. So take that for what it's worth. And at the end of the day, Sean, with this matchup, I think I wasn't necessarily as concerned about the win versus loss as I'm sure a lot of people were in this matchup, whether Penn State got the 7-6, 8-5. It's kind of window dressing on what was an underwhelming finish to the season. You would have liked to have added another victory over a ranked SEC opponent. But let's face it, they went into this matchup so shorthanded. It wasn't really fair to say this was the 2021 Penn State football team going up against the 2021 Arkansas team. So you figured, okay, I picked a loss here, but you wanted to see some progress. And I think you saw it in other spots as well. I think, you know, look at what they did on the defensive front. Smith Dilbert, a guy who had three total tackles on the entire season, had three sacks in the first half. And one of them was kind of a escort the quarterback to the sideline behind the line of scrimmage sack. But Smith Dilbert stepped up and, again, crediting Jesse Lucchetta, who knew he had a shift over to Mike when Ellis Brooks opted out. And he spent a lot of time, you know, trying to get Smith Dilbert caught up on everything he needed from a mental standpoint, because Smith Dilbert has everything he needs from a physical standpoint, a guy who didn't pick up football until his senior year of high school. So really a nice potential launch pad for him, a guy that you're going to need to play a significant role for you in 2022. And then, hey, Jordan Vandenberg, hello. I mean, we've heard about this guy's motor and we saw it on display against Arkansas. That was a good sign. And I think overall, Curtis Jacobs, again, comes out of year number two. I feel like he is the five-star talent we talked about when they signed him in December of 2019. And I'm really excited to see what lies ahead for Jacobs as, you know, maybe that potential game wrecker kind of player that Brandon Smith didn't blossom into. Jair Brown had himself a game. So defensively, I mean, we can talk about offense. We've already done that. But defensively, considering what they were up against, it was bound to happen. They were going to run out of gas, and it did. But I thought that was the side of the field where you saw some things and said, if this carries into the spring, maybe they aren't set for the kind of drop-off that people anticipate because of the personnel they're losing.
Yeah, you've got some hot spots on that defense. I mean, you look at defensive tackle, you know, if we see P.J. Mustipher come back, which I think we will, but you've got Kaziah Izzard and Devon Ellis getting, you know, big-time reps and starters reps and things like that. And then you've got some other pieces in place. They're going to have to figure out defensive end. I mean, Smith-Vilbert had 3 sacks, but I don't think, you know, watching that game, he's going to pop and be a guy that anybody thinks is something that we didn't know that Smith-Vilbert was. I look at Zariah Fisher, you know, he flashed a little bit, but he's going to need an offseason.
He's twitchy.
Well, that's what they need, man. They need somebody to go after the quarterback. And you know, you got Smith-Vilbert and Nick Tarbert, and you know exactly what you're getting with Tarbert and every time he's out there. But they got to find somebody that can get after the quarterback. Fisher needs to put on some weight so that, you know, when they run at him, as I think they did today, he's not engulfed and down the line. So, you know, encouraged on the interior of that defensive line. Curtis Jacobs, I think, is a stud. They played him in the box today. I thought he was terrific. Just in terms of like running down that dude, you know, he really did a great job playing it from that position. I think he played all three linebacker positions for them. It's funny because you've got Jacobs and you don't think of him as a young guy. You don't think of Parker Washington and Keandre Lambert Smith, two true sophomores, as young guys. But they're kind of in that realm of players that you're feeling pretty good about the future. You know, all over the roster, all over that depth chart, you've got holes that you've got to fill and you've got questions that you have to answer. But some of those sophomores have done a really nice job.
And that's great to see because they were absolutely screwed their first year on campus. They didn't have a padded practice. Even if they showed up last January, they didn't have a padded practice until October. So that really set a lot of guys back, I think. But you're starting to see now that we're a little bit more distance from that signing day, that 2020 recruiting class is starting to carry its weight on this roster. That's going to continue. And if you want to feel a little bit better, a little more optimism on the defensive front, think of this: P.J. Mustipher, Hakeem Beamon, and Adisa Isaac is where I was drawing a blank. Those are names that weren't involved here late that we think are going to factor in. Anything can happen in college football. We're still not entirely sure in anything. It's a day-to-day process when it comes to personnel, but there should be reinforcements, and I think we're going to see another attempt to make a splash in the transfer portal, because if you don't try to find yourself the next Arnold Ebikade, you are doing yourself a disservice.
Yep, still looking at defensive end, still looking at linebacker. Those are the two big ones in terms of Penn State's priorities here. You know, one reason for that, they will not have Jesse Lucchetta next year. An expected decision by Lucchetta, but he announced after the game he's going to the draft. As you know, we are big fans of Jesse Lucchetta here. I thought he had a terrific year. Again, I still think he could have grown a little bit more with an extra year, but not going to criticize that decision one bit, because he really showed, especially today, you know, how much I think he's improved as an overall football player. And I'll give you the floor for this one, because I know you got some Jesse thoughts.
Well, think about this front seven this year without Jesse Lucchetta. I mean, it's pretty scary. And this was a defense that for much of the year was among the nation's best in terms of allowing points and coming up with red zone stops. And he didn't have the gaudy statistics. He didn't have the highlight plays, but he was so important in stabilizing the situation when you lost guys from offseason injuries and preseason injuries. And it came up big today. And I think for a lot of fans out there, whatever you think of the opt-outs, I'm not one to criticize them, but I think Jesse Lucchetta won a lot of people over. And I think they'll remember the effort he gave today. What they're going to miss Jesse more than anything, I think, is when you're trying to come off of a season and a finish like this, where you lost 6 of your last 8 games, your culture is shaking a little bit, and you need those guys who are the stabilizers in that regard. He fits that mold. I don't think he was actually a team captain this year. He was a team captain last year, but he's a team captain. And for him to now step aside, a guy who was a tremendous mentor, a guy who holds people accountable, isn't afraid to get in guys' faces, you take him out of the equation. This is just a team that really needs to be careful going into this next semester. They got to glue together instead of, you know, becoming dysfunctional, because you can't feel good about how the season ended, and there's got to be hard feelings. They're going to take a little break. Everyone's going to decompress, hopefully exhale a little bit, And then you got to come back and you figure out what went wrong and how do we get it right. And that requires a lot of criticism and constructive criticism, and how you digest that and how you move forward with that determines a lot about the trajectory of this program. And a guy, without a guy like Jesse Lucchetta there, and we've talked about some of the other leaders they're losing, it's time for some players to step up.
Yeah, they've got to cultivate a new Jesse Lucchetta, and I'm not really sure who that guy is going to be. You know, I don't think Sutherland's that guy, even though he's coming back next year. But they've got to find some more
guys. Mustafer's a big step forward. If you keep Mustafer, that's a tremendous step forward in that department, I think.
No doubt. He's an all Big Ten guy. That's all the best to Jesse, no doubt. One more housekeeping thing before we let you go. Penn State picked up a commitment from Neo Avery. We'll talk about him more on the next episode. I'm a big fan of Neo Avery, a guy that can, you know, could play legitimately at this level as a tight end or as an edge guy, as a defensive end. He's a high school quarterback, really, really athletic kid, great size, 6'4", 6'5". 225, just a really big Neo Avery fan. He's one of my favorite kids in the region, just because of a lot of the things I've seen on film and some of the athletic numbers really stack up well. Good football player too, not just an athlete, not just a guy that's going to go out there and test really well. Sort of an anecdote here was he broke his hand this year. And as a quarterback, that's obviously not ideal. He went out and played defensive end without really playing it much before, and he was better than the guy on the other side, who's Dylan Gooden, who has a Penn State offer, who's a top 247 kid. So really like what Neo Avery brings to the table as an all-around football player, and the athleticism on top of that is fantastic. So huge pickup for Penn State. I think the ratings are kind of all over the place. Neo Avery, I think, is 116 in the 24/7 sports rankings, a little bit lower in the composite, but this is, to me, a really, really good pickup for Penn State.
He's got a 92 rating, and like you said, it's a fun one. It's one where you can use your imagination, and depending on the coaching staff, and in this case, Penn State's, you kind of have one position coach make his case, the other position coach make his case, and then the head coach has to figure out where the guy ends up on the field. By the way, 2 weeks removed from signing the number 6 class in 24/7 Sports composite ranking for the 2022 cycle, Penn State currently ranked number 3 in the 2023 recruiting class rankings. They are up to 6 commitments now with Neo Avery coming on board.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I haven't even looked at the 2023 rankings yet, but no, it's a good start for Penn State. Obviously, the 5-star in Birchmeyer and Alex Birchmeyer, and Neo Avery, they're going to sign 12 tight ends this year, I guess. So that's kind of the direction that thing's going. But tight ends can be good. Tight ends can be versatile. I think Neo Avery, just a terrific player.
Well, I think that's all we got. We have a lot of time to talk about everything else, man. We got to get downstairs to the hospitality suite.
I want to watch the end of the Rose Bowl here because I hate defense. Yes.
You and I will be back with frequency this winter. We're going to have guests on, former players, future players, hopefully some current people in the Penn State facilities here over the course of the winter. There's a lot of big picture things to happen. There are changes that will come to the staff, to the roster. That's all still on the way. And I just want to say, Sean, it's been a pleasure. It's been a lot more fun, even though Penn State sputtered at the end. It's been a lot more fun talking football with you than it was in 2020 when we were talking about a lot of things that weren't football. And this is the end of my 5th season covering Penn State. I can't even believe it. And my 4th alongside you at Lions 24/7. So thank you to you. Thanks to our producer, Lance Glenn. And I just want to mention this one more time. About 1.1 million downloads across platforms for our episodes, which I just shake my head at, and very appreciative to everyone out there who continues to tune in, especially those of you who tune in after the losses.
Yeah, the therapy sessions, as those people like to call them, are often ones that it's very hit and miss in terms of whether people want to listen or not. But we are incredibly humbled by the support and the downloads and the YouTube and all the subscriptions and all that kind of stuff. It's really unbelievable. So happy new year to everyone that's listening. If you're still with us listening, good for you, man, because that's almost 48 minutes of us blathering about this game, which was fun in some spots, not so fun in some other spots, but it's kind of following Penn State football. So thank you to everybody that has been listening all year long.
All right, we're going to head back north. We'll talk to you guys real soon. Thanks for joining us from Tampa at the Outback Bowl. For Sean, I'm Tyler. This is the Lions 24/7 podcast.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. We expected someone else. So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.